is Coach Paul Westhead. Coach, what's going on first and foremost? How are you?
Hi, D-Lion. How are you?
Doing all right. Doing all right. So I woke up this morning, and my Twitter feed tells me that 40 years ago today, you and the Los Angeles Lakers won an NBA championship over the Sixers in the Spectrum, and you were led by a rookie, Magic Johnson. My first question to you is, knowing that you don't have Kareem, who had dominant numbers in that series leading up to that point, and he's sidelined and not even on the trip, when do you say to yourself, I'm going to start Magic at the center position?
Well, it actually happened on the flight from L.A. to Philly. Not by coincidence, Magic sat in Kareem's seat. Kareem always sat in the first row in first class, and I get on the plane, and there's Magic acting like he's Kareem. So that gave me an idea. So during the flight, I talked to Magic. I said, could you play center? He said, oh, yeah, no problem. He said, I played center in high school, and I realized that was like 2 years ago.
Right.
So he was very accommodating and willing, and we had one shoot around, and we ran a couple plays for him as the center. And sure enough, we started the game. In fact, as we were breaking the team huddle for the opening tip, Jim Chung said to me, who was 6'10", said, Coach, I'm jumping, right? I said, no, Magic's jumping. And then after that opening tip, it all fell in place.
Paul, how much, you said you had the one shoot around, but how much did you change what you ran, or was it just little nuances, and it was used, one, because you didn't have Kareem as the center, and two, to maybe throw the Sixers a little off balance by putting him in that position?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't want to take too much credit. We did it as a, I wouldn't say a publicity stunt, but we did it to kind of throw the Sixers off by Magic playing center. And the first two or three possessions down in the beginning of the game, we did put him in the post and throw it into him. And he did make a turnaround sky hook. So I guess symbolically, that was one up for us. But the rest of the game, I mean, Magic played guard, forward. He did whatever he did. People said we played small ball. Well, we didn't have Kareem, so we became automatically small. It's just that, you know, we just played free and easy, and we made shots, and we made most of our free throws, of which the Sixers struggled to make. So, you know, many times that decides the game.
Paul, because Magic ends up with the 42, his 15 boards, I think it was 8 assists, Jamal Wilkes' 16 of 30 goes maybe somewhat overlooked, and his 37 points. Were you going in there saying somebody else is also going to have to come through in terms of the scoring aspect of this? Because Kareem was averaging better than 33.
Right, right. Yeah, we knew we were going to have a scoring drought if somebody didn't pick it up. The only thing I can say to you, D, is at halftime, you know, it was a real close game. I think it was 1 or 2 points up or down. I did say to my assistant then, Pat Riley, I said, you know, we got a pretty good chance here because we haven't gotten much scoring from Jamal and from Norm Nixon. So, you know, we might be in pretty good shape. And sure enough, Jamal comes out in the second half, and he was really, other than Magic's spectacular play, Jamal was really the difference in the game.
And you're right, Norm did not have a good shooting game because he finished 1 of 10. But fortunately, you didn't need it.
Right, and we found out, we knew, but we found out later that Norm was playing with a broken index finger.
Ooh.
In his shooting hand. So he never made any excuse, and he played all those minutes. But it's tough to shoot when you got a broken finger.
So, Paul, this morning I was watching the post-game interview that happens in the locker room at the Spectrum. And Rick Barry, I think he's shocked at what he had just seen. And he's also a little surprised at how kind of tranquil the locker room appeared for a team that had just won the NBA championship. And Magic's response was, well, I think we're all a little surprised. Do you remember the locker room and what it felt like? And were you surprised?
Yeah, I absolutely remember the locker room. We walked into the locker room. I had to go out right away for the presentation with Larry O'Brien. Took about 5 minutes. And I came back into the locker room. It was quiet. There was like silence. I mean, it was grinning and laughing, but no celebration, no champagne, no hilarity, nobody jumping up and down and dancing. I think our players were physically and emotionally exhausted, and they just was glad it was over.
Now, let me ask you the mentality, because back then it was before they went to 2-3-2. So you would have had the opportunity, had you not taken care of business in game six, to go back and play game seven on your home court. I know you were 60-22, but was there a major difference of who you guys were, road versus home, that year? And, you know, were you glad that your guys didn't want to just leave it to getting back home?
Yeah, D, you know, I've never been an analytics guy, so I have no idea what our win-loss on the road and home was. But I will tell you this. Most of the people, our fans, our Laker fans, and many of the media were convinced that we were going to return for Game 7. So this was just a routine, like an exercise, or like an exhibition. Go ahead back, play Game 6, and then come on back for Game 7. Kareem might be ready. And then let's get down to winning the championship. I tell you, I brought my wife Cassie with me because I thought we had a chance to win. I just saw a comment today that Jerry Buss told his daughter Jeannie Buss not to come. Now you can figure it out for yourself, but they didn't have a chance to win.
So I'm glad you got to be the right one.
Exactly. So was I, because we found out that night and the next day that there was no way that Kareem was going to play in Game 7. He wouldn't have been able to play for maybe a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That would be significant. Now, how about the fact that you were playing in your hometown? Now, you're not coaching the home team, but you grew up here. You're a West Catholic guy. How many family folks were in the stands, and did you get any chance to celebrate with them?
Yeah, I did. You know what? We had some of my brother and his wife Doris were there, and some of their kids, some of our neighbors, the McDonoughs, who we were friends with for a lifetime, were there. And as usual, when you're the coach's wife, you get a handful of maybe 8, 10, 12 tickets. Kathy gave them all out and found out she only had one ticket left for herself. And she wound up in the hotbed of 76er fans. She didn't say a word the whole game. With about a minute to go, she jumped up when we went up, let's say, 8 or 10. And somebody said, "Who are you?" And she said, "Well, I'm the coach's wife." So uncharacteristic of Philly fans, when we won, about 20 of them stood up and applauded her.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Philly fans, good sometimes.
Absolutely. Paul, you've had a lot of stops along the way. And I had to tell a caller earlier when I was saying that you were going to come on. It did not know you had also won a WNBA championship. And that was with Phoenix, correct?
Correct. That was with the Phoenix Mercury with Diana Taurasi.
Yep, absolutely. And then I said, and his last stop was University of Oregon. Now, it wasn't, you didn't have Sabrina, but I'm curious if you pay attention to, like, say, because you had been at the University of Oregon and they're having this unbelievable year this year, and you had been there. Do you pay attention just because you once were connected?
Yeah, I mean, I watched the women's game. I'm an NBA, a WNBA fan. I'm a college women's basketball fan, and specifically Oregon, because you know, I have friends and we're still there, and administrators. So I think it was a great season for them. It's a shame they couldn't complete it all with an NCAA championship, but wow, what a team they had. And Sabrina, she's about as good as I've seen in a long time in college.
Absolutely. Well, you had Taurasi, so you had one of the best for sure.
Right. Well, the difference now is Sabrina has to now go to the next level and prove it in the WNBA, which Taurasi has already done.
Yes, exactly. And Paul, how about in terms of the NBA? Do you watch the NBA game still or not as much?
Yeah, not as much, Dee. I mean, I'm out here in Los Angeles, so there's a game a night almost when the league's going between the Clippers and the Lakers. So, I'm kind of a fan. I still kind of root a little bit for the Sixers. I still like the Portland Trail Blazers because of the Jack Ramsey, Jack McKinney background.
Sure.
I just like individual people. There's nobody better than LeBron right now, even though with all of the hype with Michael Jordan, it's hard to compare the two of them. But LeBron's the best player in basketball today.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Since you brought up his name, have you watched The Last Dance at all? Because it has given us, as basketball fans, at least something to gravitate towards. That is it. You know, even though it's going back in time, there's some new stuff there.
Yeah, I mean, I really like it. I mean, I like the film, the clips, some of the spectacular moves. But I like Michael laying out in his lounge chair, puffing his cigar and having a drink. And, well, I knew I was going to win that game. So relaxed. He's perfectly in control, as he was when he played.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in terms of your family, everybody's good, Paul? Everything's all right out there in Los Angeles?
Everyone's good, Dee. We're staying in the house. Our kids come like every other day with food, and they stay down about 20 yards away from our front door, and they sit and chat from their car, and then 2 days later, another family shows up. So it's been fun.
Perfect. Well, tell Cassie I appreciate you and her giving me some of your time here today, because I went through her to track you down.
We go a long way, Dee, and I'm always a pleasure to talk to you and your family.
I appreciate it, Paul. Take care of yourselves, and thank you for joining us. Paul Westhead here on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Wow, how about a couple of the things that stood out for me, Tyler? One that I shouldn't be surprised, because it kind of highlights what we see in the Jordan documentary right now, like just the mentality. So they're on a regular plane. I mean, they only have X number of first class seats. Some people on that roster are sitting, you know, like you and I. We're pedestrians and we're going to be in the main cabin. But that he took Kareem's seat automatically says he's in a different place. And the other was the silence of the locker room when they had won. And I saw it this morning, so it did stand out to me. It's crazy.
Yeah, and the one that I think I went to right away that was kind of shocking was, you know, the buses thinking, well, this is going back to game seven. I'm not going to bring... We're not bringing the family along, not bringing Jeannie along, because we're just going back to L.A. to play game seven.
Way to go, Paul, though. You brought Cassie, and that I just need to give you a little background. When I was in college, and towards the end of my college career, now I'm going to try to get a job, and I do, I wasn't going to be able to come home for any kind of holidays. You know, you're starting out. And the Westheads lived in Los Angeles, which is where I got my first job. And so they would allow me to join their family for Easter and Thanksgiving. And it was great. And that's actually the house where I used to do that, is the house that he's talking, where his kids are driving up and bringing them food and having conversations from 20 yards away. That was fun. 610-632-0975. Let's check in with Matt in Flowertown. Matt, what's going on? How are you? And thanks for calling the Fanatic.
Hey, Dee. Thanks for having me. I'm here in the Acme shopping, and I was listening in the car to your interview. And, well, first, I really appreciate the work that you do there at 97.5, but also I've always appreciated you on the sidelines. So I just wanted to get you...
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. Those were fun times for me.
Yeah, for me as well, as a basketball fan. And I know I didn't get a question in with Paul Westhead, but
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. He would have known the answer to this question. There's probably five people that know the answer to this question. But Wilt Chamberlain went to Overbrook, as you know, as many people know. He also went to Kansas.
Yes.
And there's only one person that went to Overbrook and then traveled with Wilt Chamberlain to Kansas. And his name is Doug Lehman. And it was Paul's best friend growing up.
Wow.
And they used to be lifeguards down the beach. And so I know that little known fact. I figured I'd tickle him with that little.
I'm going to text him when I get to my next break and tell him. You said the guy's name was Dan Lehman or Dave?
No, Doug.
Doug. Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah, that's all right. He's been interviewed on Comcast Sportsnet. He's written a few books about his times with Wilt Chamberlain and the racial integration as they travel across the country. But he's a gem. If you ever get a hold of him, he'll talk more than I do. But at the same time, he's got a lot of great history with Wilt. And obviously, Paul Westhead loved the Philly connection. So just wanted to chime in and say
that's
hello to you.
That's a great one. Because I knew that Paul went to West Catholic. And then I was saying earlier, I really should say he also went to St. Joe's. And that was his connection, really eventually to the NBA game because of Jack McKinney and Jack Ramsey. So it's quite a circle of basketball people that do come from this area over time. And I've always been impressed how they kind of have gotten each other into the next level of the game.
Yeah, they help one another for sure.
They do.
And I've been benefited from all that, from Speedy Mars to Fran Dunphy, and just wanted to give you that little tidbit.
All right, Matt, I appreciate that.
Yeah, Steve, take care, and thank you for fitting me in here.
Absolutely, Matt. Thanks for calling the Fanatic. What a small world. What a small world. I'll have to check Doug out and his books. So just even to think about, he just mentioned Speedy Morris and Fran Dunphy, but there is, and I'm sure if we went to other places that they have, you know, a hotbed, so to speak. Matter of fact, I was reading a great article the other day, and I hate to say this, just like I don't pay for pay-per-view, but I would have liked to have watched the documentary, but it was on Showtime. And that I don't have that. And the documentary is about this part of the D.C. area that it's a hotbed of basketball players, the biggest being Kevin Durant, but Markelle Fultz hails from that area, Victor Oladipo from that area, Len Bias was part of that. I think it said it has had 25 players from this county go to the NBA. And Kevin Durant's business partner wanted to do, this is so funny. It sounds like, everybody's doing documentaries because they're seeing the Jordan thing happen. When in fact, these things do take time. And in the case of this documentary, they started doing it 2 years ago. And the fact that it aired on Friday night, you know, it was 2 years in the making. And maybe we wouldn't even know as much about it. But right now, because of the success of The Last Dance, I think people are talking about these types of programs. And because, as somebody, was Brandle who was telling us, you know, you've watched the reruns or you've run through and binged all these series and episodes and you don't want to rewatch anymore. And so if you have something fresh, you'll take a peek at it. What they did when they pitched this documentary, they wanted to, you know, basically how this was that all these players came out of there. And the guy running Showtime told them, we'll go back and like dig a little deeper and see what else was going on. How did it become this? And so I think it's only an hour long, but I'm hoping eventually that you'll be able to somehow get it through an app. I guess I probably could get it through it's called the PG County Talent. And I believe it's like Basketball County. Yeah, it's Prince George's County. And it was on Friday night, so last night. And I think they say it's oh, and part of the tie-in is Morgan Wooten, who had, you know, unbelievable success with DeMatha High School. Matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, Brian Westbrook, he went to DeMatha, and we know him for his football, but he played basketball there. I don't know if Morgan would have still been coaching then, probably, maybe, maybe not. But there's like some great history when they went back and made it not just about rattling off the names of these players, and I highlighted some pretty good ones. I didn't realize, when I was reading this, I didn't realize Victor Oladipo was the second overall pick in his draft. I mean, that was a good one. Durant was second. Amazingly, the number one pick is probably, I mean, one day maybe Fultz will be something worthy of that, but the number two picks, games are pretty high level, and Len Bias, obviously we never got the chance to see that. But part of the story is that there was an AAU coach who, and these guys really, they revered him, these young kids, and they were super helpful. I know another kid, the kid who plays on the Warriors and went to Duke, Quinn Cook. He's from that area also. And anyhow, this AAU coach, you know, had such success, and high-level college coaches like Krzyzewski and Bob Huggins, they say, you know, if you wanted to be in the mix of recruiting those guys, you had to go through, his name was Curtis Malone. And unfortunately, so he has this great run with this AAU team, but he was living a double life, and eventually he was arrested for selling drugs at a very high level, and he went to jail. But all those kids went to his sentencing, because a lot of them, even knowing what he had done, they felt like they had to be there to represent him. So there's a lot of things in this documentary, and I'm going to find a way to watch it, but I'm kind of holding my ground on the same as paying for my UFC with when I already had the app. I got to find another way. 610-632-0975. If anybody out there saw it, I'd love to hear your perspective on it. And we can also go back and touch on any of the topics we've had here today. Brett Brown talking about a lot of different things with his team when he talked to people yesterday, gave a lot of his time for an hour. We've also talked about the different things going on in baseball with them coming up with a plan, MLB did, and they presented that in a very thorough document that went to the Players Association. Though, it's interesting, in that document, they didn't touch on any of the financial parts of it. It was all about policy and safety and how they would implement that. So we talked a little about that. I, for one, we never really hit too hard on it, but I thought Bryce Harper's outline for how he would do the season if he were the commissioner hit on all the points: the length of the schedule, how he would do the postseason, the six-man rotation, having every other Monday off. I mean, he pretty much hit on everything, and he definitely did it as a destination that you would play in one place. And I think, you know, it sounds like that's difficult, but I think you can do it. And if you're shortening a season, it makes it feasible as well. And we can talk about what we think will happen. We'll look at great views tomorrow when the PGA puts on their skins game that is going to be televised 2-6 on NBC Sports. And are you interested in maybe placing a wager on that? Just because there's live action to it, and there hasn't been a lot of that. 610-632-0975. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic. Couple more segments here on 97.5 The Fanatic for me, D. Lynam. Rob Motti will take over at 7. He'll be with you until 10 o'clock. I'll be back here tomorrow at noon. Before I went to break, I was talking about another documentary, and it happens to also center around basketball, but it's called Basketball County in the Water, and it's about The History of Basketball in Prince George's County. It aired last night on Showtime. And I was mentioning the talent that has come out of there, but now I found some of the other names. Jeff Green, Sam Young, Delonte West, Hawk Hill alum, Dante Cunningham, Villanova, Keith Bogans, Roger Mason, Jarrett Jack, Michael Beasley, Rebecca Brunson. I know if you're not a WNBA fan, but she won 5 WNBA championships with the Lynx. Markel Fultz. I always say Unaku played at Villanova, I think. Do I have that right? I'll look it up. I recognize the name. Trevor Graham, the two Grant brothers, Jerrion and Jeremy, and they obviously got down there because their dad had played for Washington. Ty Lawson, Quinn Cook, Victor Oladipo, and Kevin Durant, obviously. And I mentioned Len Bias. I mean, and that's not everybody, they say. Since 2000, 30 NBA players plus multiple WNBA stars and hundreds of Division I college players have come out of PG County. So I'm gonna get a hold of that. I'll let you know, Tyler. It's right up my alley.
Numbers.
Yeah.
Man, right? For one county?
That's
insane.
That's right. That's why they said in the water. It must be in the water.
Well, and you know what the funny thing is, too? You know, there are counties that are near or in large cities. You know, Baltimore is not a huge city. I mean, it's not small, but it's not like a massive city. And it produces an unbelievable amount of talent.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know in an interview that Kevin Durant, so Kevin Durant is part of a production. I think he's kind of merged. Well, I mentioned that his business partner was the one who pitched this. But one of the interviews that I saw of him, he was explaining how, and this is in the outside the D.C. area, and at the time, you know, there was a time where it wasn't safe. And so a lot of these kids were trying to go to Boys and Girls Clubs, but then the walk home would be an issue. And I think he even said one time he slept in his car until he felt like it was safer to get like in the morning because it would be daylight. And that so they kind of supposedly, I haven't seen it yet, but I know that what they tried to do was try to investigate how they got to the bottom of where these kids now were able to get to these community centers and how that became the thing to do and stay on the right track. Because you're still encountering, if your neighborhood's tough, it's tough, you know? And somehow, when you have that many names, that's a lot of people who not only stayed on the right track, but made it pretty big or got to the high, really great heights in a sport that there's a ton of competition. So, PG County, mark it down. We'll check into that one. That was on last night. Coming up tomorrow, you know, I kind of ignored the NASCAR because I was so excited about the Skins game. But I do believe NASCAR takes place tomorrow as well. And you will have a live golfing event at Seminole Golf Club down there in Florida. I think it's Juneau Beach. And what a special piece of property. And one of the things when we talk about golf, for instance, Augusta National is so pristine, so amazing, hosts the Masters. But we have had the privilege of seeing it because they have the Masters every year. And this is going to be the first time that there is a live broadcast at Seminole. And so imagine that's also the challenge of NBC. You know, you want to show this property off, but you've never set up anything here before, and there's no layout for how somebody before you maybe did it. But as Brandel Chambly from the Golf Channel told us, they are going to have the Walker Cup, and that I will guarantee you be televised. I would assume that was in the deal to do that, and probably will be done by the Golf Channel. So this kind of a dry run through for them for this, as it is for their upcoming, the PGA Tour coming back to reopening. And that'll take place at the Charles Schwab. Now, what we don't know for tomorrow, we know there's no caddies. We don't know if they have the same kind of obstruction in the golf, in the hole for putting. I know they wanted to be the putt to be able to, you know, drop in. And obviously, because there's money on the line and it is going to charity, if you could get that changed, it is helpful. I can only say, and I'm not anywhere near their talent, but it does, it's different when you're putting and it's kind of, you know, just stays on the top and you're hoping that you didn't hit it too hard to hit that cup and bounce out. But so that, and the other thing that will be unique to this Skins game, because a lot of times you can concede a putt and you move on. You can't in this because there are separate categories where you could birdies. So anything that is a birdie or an eagle putt, they have to put that out, even if it won't affect the team, match, because there is separate money on the line for birdies and eagles. So that'll be a little different with this particular Skins game. And the other thing is, if you concede something, there's some kind of little fine line that they can, like, you can redo it. Oh, my friend Uncle Al's on the phone. Alan from Belmar. Alan, thank you for calling.
Uncle Al, the kiddies pal.
Well, I'm fine. Happy 82nd birthday, sir.
Well, thank you. I've had you on the phone so long today that I keep getting phone calls from California and Florida and everything. So, you know who just called me and said, "Have you listened to D?" I said, "Yeah," but I kept turning it off so I wasn't rude on the phone. He said, "Well, she gave you a birthday shout out." He said, "All right." I said, "All right, get off the phone while I call her and thank her." So,
no need for that, Alan. But yes, I did say happy birthday. So, I'm glad that you had a lot of people that joined in and were able to talk to you on your 82nd.
Oh, yeah, it's good. I got a lot of good friends, and you earn your friends, so that's very nice. And so it's great. And I enjoyed your conversation with Paul Westhead, because that's bringing back a lot of memories.
Yes, can you believe that that championship he won was 40 years ago?
I know. When you get my age, you go, my, it seems like it was 20 years ago.
But, right, right, absolutely.
But anyhow, how'd you hit him this week? Any good?
Some days. One day, Wednesday was my best. And then yesterday and the day before, not so great. But
well, it's better than the other way around. You leave him with a positive attitude.
This is a good point. So now I say I'll get back at it maybe tomorrow afternoon.
All right. Well, think positive then.
And, I will say it was beautiful. I finished about 7:30 last night, and it was beautiful out. I really do enjoy being able to finish a round of golf in that kind of dusk time, as long as it's not too dark where you can still see the ball.
Well, I just talked to you-know-who. He said, I'm going to go out and play a couple holes.
Well, good for him. Good for him.
But anyhow, I just want to say thank you again. I appreciate it. Now I'm going to a party in Cherry Hill, sit outside with my mask on and have a Manhattan. So.
Perfect. That sounds like a perfect birthday, Alan. Take care.
Always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. How about it? Have a Manhattan, sit in your chair, be 6 feet social distancing, have your mask on, the weather's still good. Sounds like a perfect Saturday night happy hour and a way to celebrate a birthday for sure. That's our friend Alan from Belmar. 610-632-0975. Yes, so I was explaining about the, there are a couple of rules that are different with this particular Skins game tomorrow. I cannot imagine, even though it is an option for the four that are playing, because they have no caddies, you either can carry your own bag or you can have a push cart. If I see one of those four with a push cart, I will lose it.
Oh, you think they're all going to carry their own bags? I wouldn't, and I'm not a professional.
Well, the only thing I'll say, I carry my bag. I don't think it would be the bag that they use on their tour events, because those are those big leather bags. But I will tell you that a push cart when you're going up and down hills, it's really kind of gets in the way. Carrying the bag is better. I'm going to predict that all four are carrying their bag tomorrow. But I did like that they were given the option, and I'm assuming the option of having the push cart is for the guy who wants his leather bag as opposed to, you know, kind of making the whole effort lighter and going into what I call a walking bag. That's why they made the push cart an option. And the other thing that will be different is that they will have devices. Now, again, it's a charity event. I can't imagine if they don't have caddies when the PGA Tour opens up. I wonder if they would let them use whether it's a watch showing the yardage or the viewfinder. I can't imagine they would, but you're going to have to do your own homework and not have your handy man or woman on the bag with you.
I think it will be pretty interesting to see how much these players actually do rely on their caddies for a lot of things, you know, because I think a lot, the common person probably just, oh, it's just the guy that carries the bags and hands him a club.
No.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
There's a lot that goes into it.
And there's a lot. And that's why you always see those conversations that are happening. And they have the book because they've done their walkthroughs and they've written all their notes in there. And the caddy's a lot of time the one who does as much writing in his own book and has then conveyed that to the golfer. So, no, I think. And now, again, tomorrow it'll be fun and it is for charity. You'd like to think you know. I think Brando was right. Rory and Dustin do not want to get beat by the other two. It's the numbers on it say that would not be, it wouldn't be great for them. I mean, they're ranked 1 in 5 in the world. And, you know, Matthew's just starting out on his PGA event, but I mean, PGA career, and he has won one event. But, you know, 1 in 5, you're supposed to be able to win this. So we shall see. 610-632-0975. D-Line, I'm here with you for one more segment on 97.5 The Fanatic. We are nearing the top of the hour, 7 o'clock hour, here at 97.5 The Fanatic. And earlier today, the Major League Baseball had given the Players Association a very thick document. I think it had 67 pages of things that they would do when reopening and how it would look and what they, you know, we had different examples, but a baseball that was touched by numerous people on a play, now you're going to change that ball to start the next play. Things like that. People who aren't in the game have masks on and are social distancing in the dugout. But now, in the last hour, there is a report that Major League Baseball, because I mentioned earlier how that 67-page document did not touch on the finances of things, and these are conversations that we know have been, you know, about, and the most recent one we saw where Kershaw had gone on the Dan Patrick show and, you know, just talked about what's that, how much are you supposed to take a hit as a player versus what the owners are. So anyhow, in this new 12-page presentation to players, Major League Baseball now is breaking down the economics of playing games without fans. And it informed the union that each contest with prorated salaries, will cost the league $640,000 in losses. This according to the Associated Press. And the losses would not be spread equally, which doesn't, you know, that's not surprising to me. So this is projecting that the New York Yankees would lose $312 million. The Dodgers and Mets would lose more than $200 million. The Cubs and the Red Sox losing slightly less than 200. And meanwhile, a team like the Detroit Tigers would lose the least at 84 million. And so now when you put those numbers out there like that, you can only imagine what the conversations will be between the union and Major League Baseball, because as some of the players are saying, you know, we've already taken the prorated. Now you're asking us to do more, and the league is saying, you know, they want a 50-50. And as we know, there's never been a salary cap in baseball. Tyler, what do you think of all this?
Yeah, it's certainly, and I know that the whole dynamic has shifted, of course, because we're in unprecedented times, and everybody that continues to bring up the, you know, desperate times, desperate measures, or you got to try anything to get them back on the field, but it's certainly interesting to see how people are starting to almost side with owners, where you almost never see that, because it's that classic argument, like you're siding with millionaires over billionaires, you know, that classic argument.
Absolutely.
But people are starting to side with owners because it's almost to the point where they're like, well, if I'm working, then you should be working. Or the flip side is, if I don't go to work, I don't get paid. So if this thing gets started and you don't go to work, you don't get paid. That's kind of where I think a lot of people are looking at it at this point, is they're trying to almost personally rationalize it.
All right, here's another number for you. Basically, this is also in the same 12-page report, and I'm reminding people that the report was done by Major League Baseball. So it's them giving the math that they've learned to baseball, and now the report is coming out because Associated Press was able to get a hold of this. But MLB outlined that 39% of team revenue was at the gate or from other in-park revenue streams. And, you know, that 39%, we know that Adam Silver said that that's 40% for the NBA. So it's right there with them. And somehow the NBA understands that we got to do something. And baseball, because they've never had the salary cap, you know, you don't want to have any kind of conversation where you're kind of even inching towards saying this is a conversation that's okay, even if it's a desperate time.
Well, and you know what the big issue, I think, for the, you know, we always mention casual fans, because the hardcore diehard fans will stick with whatever their sport is through thick and thin.
Sure.
Baseball is in an odd spot to begin with, because there's really not a lot of casual fans anymore to begin with.
No.
It's kind of a dying sport. There's not many people that are like myself who have been baseball first for a long time.
Mm-mm.
If this season goes down the drain or close to it because of money, I don't know if there's a bounce back for many fans.
Wow. And I always think back to the strike in 94, where they didn't have the World Series.
Right.
And many felt like that you cannot come back from this. And at the time, I lived in Cincinnati, and that is a baseball town. And maybe it'll become a Burroughs town now.
Well, and the thing is, too, you mentioned that 94 strike. It's kind of indicative there, because the story behind that 94 strike, a lot of people will hold firm that the Montreal Expos were the best team that year. Probably could have been a World Series favorite. And, you know, less than 15 years later, just about 10 years later, they're up and out of town.
Gone.
And they're the Nationals now. You know, and I don't think a small market team will lose its value if this happens, but who knows?
Who knows? I will say this. If, you know, baseball gets caught, and again, you know, Major League Baseball is doing its job by making sure the world knows that they've been working on how to safely play their sport, and making, you know, that document has been given to the union. Now this document has been given to, they're making sure the public knows we're doing our part. If other sports come to agreements of how to play and how to get paid, and the one that gets left behind is baseball. You know, I said that I think football and hockey have the greatest challenges because of the numbers in terms of players with football, and in hockey with all your equipment, like you got to make sure this stuff is cleaned, you know. But if those sports their conversations are about just how we get back and playing, and the one that's making it all about the money, it just doesn't, from an optics standpoint, it just doesn't look good for a sport that's already trying to figure out how do we bring the young fan along to become, you know, a fan that's going to be there when he's an adult, bringing his son or daughter into the mix. I mean, it just doesn't seem like this is the best time. I understand it's not an easy solution. I absolutely get that. And if you feel like owners have been distrustful towards you and your group in the past, I get that too. Because as you mentioned, we're talking about millions and billions. So I get it. But that's when you need to step back and take a look at a bigger picture and say, what are we arguing over?
And that number that keeps circulating is that $4 billion that the owners will lose as a whole. And $4 billion is a ton of money, and no one ever wants to lose money. But I think your average fan is probably going to look at $4 billion spread out over 30 teams. It's still a lot of money.
A lot.
But in like the hindsight of things, I think that the average fan's going to go, You groveled over X amount of dollars, which in reality for an owner is maybe not that much because they just assume they're all billionaires.
Right.
That's where I think a lot of fans are going to fall off.
Yeah. Yeah. And what people don't realize when they say people are, not everything is liquid cash for people. So when your worth is in buildings and real estate or companies, and all of that is now going south, the worth of an individual that we might have considered, you know, big, can also be, he can be dropping off some too. I'm just saying that the whole thing can get really dicey quickly. And it's no different than us watching the world, our economy as a whole. So, but I will be following how those conversations continue. We are out of time. Let's thank our two guests that came on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Brandel Chambly of the Golf Channel. And again, you can see the pregame on the Golf Channel tomorrow at 1:30 leading into that driving relief skins match, which will be on NBC Sports. And then Coach Paul Westhead, a Philly native, great guy who on this day 40 years ago won an NBA championship at the Spectrum against the Sixers in Game 6. Fun to chat with an old friend. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate your time, you listening, and you calling in. Tyler and I will be back tomorrow again at noon. Rob Motti has you covered until 10 tonight. Be safe, have a great evening, and thanks for being with us.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.